Okay, so the title of the presentation is Identifying the Socioeconomic Causes of Disparities in Health Outcomes Using Geographic Information Systems. It is now a pilot study as opposed to the full study. Okay, there are no relationships to disclose in terms of financing of the project. A number of studies have documented a close relationship between a lack of access to care and the use of emergency rooms for basic health care. And often what happens is people will use emergency rooms for their basic care, or they'll postpone basic care until they're ill enough that they end up in the emergency room. Health outcomes are very highly correlated then with use of emergency rooms. So if you're using emergency rooms for your basic care, there's a lack of continuity and follow-up that often leads to poor health outcomes. So there's a very strong correlation between health outcomes and use of emergency rooms for basic care. The following are a number of programs that are included in the new healthcare reforms that are designed to reduce the costs associated and the poor health outcomes associated with emergency room use for preventable illnesses. So for now on, I'm going to be using the term ambulatory care sensitive diagnoses, or ACS diagnoses. That essentially means ambulatory care sensitive is diagnoses resulting from a lack of ambulatory care or preventive care. That's why the term is so frequently used in the literature. So some of the programs in the new healthcare reforms designed to reduce ACS or use of emergency rooms for ACS conditions would be increased reimbursement of primary care doctors. The purpose of that is to expand the number of doctors in low-income and minority neighborhoods where ER use is exceptionally high. Another is to establish healthcare homes for all Medicaid patients. The idea being that every single patient is going to have a doctor, a healthcare facility where they have been assigned, where they can get continuity of care. So they've got a place to go when they need their care. Increased role of managed care, and therefore more, the idea being more communication between doctors, between your primary care and your specialists. Expansion of Medicaid eligibility. So with the increase in the cap, raising of the cap on Medicaid eligibility, the hope is that more people will be eligible and therefore enrolled in Medicaid. And we're going to look at some of the implications of that expansion to see, in fact, is that likely to reduce emergency room use? The hope is certainly that it would, that people, because they are now insured under Medicaid, will have better access to primary care and therefore less need for the use of emergency rooms for basic care and for ambulatory care-sensitive diagnoses. Increased rates of private coverage through insurance premium subsidies to low-income individuals. Again, the hope is that by expanding insurance to those who are currently uninsured through the expansion of and subsidization of private coverage, we are going to reduce ER use. Creation and expansion of public health education programs. So by educating people on their basic needs and, you know, basic how to take care of themselves, essentially, we're going to improve their health outcomes and reduce the need for emergency rooms use for basic health needs. This pilot study seeks to explore the various factors affecting rates of emergency room use for treatment of ACS diagnoses across communities with different socioeconomic characteristics, because there's a lot of, there are strong disparities across neighborhoods in rates of emergency room use. And we'd also like to look at the likelihood that the recent healthcare reforms will ultimately lower reliance on emergency rooms for basic healthcare needs. So the principal database that I'm using, data set, is the New York State Department of Health Statewide Planning and Research Cooperative System, or SPARCS, which is much easier to say. I used diagnosis codes developed by AHRQ, that is the Agency for Healthcare and Research Quality, for selecting those ACS codes that would be relevant to the study, that is preventable illnesses. GIS, Geographic Information Systems Mapping, is very, very useful because it allows one to map individuals and then link them to economic characteristics of their communities. Now, while individual characteristics are very, very important, so are community-level characteristics, such as access to doctors locally, or distance to healthcare clinics, or distance to hospitals. So it's the mapping system that allows you to link individuals with the characteristics and resources of a neighborhood. And that can be tremendously important in terms of looking at health outcomes and the determinants of health outcomes. I also used another source of data, and that was FolioMed. So I actually purchased doctor-level data. So I mapped all of the doctors in the New York metropolitan area and then weeded out the ones that did not provide primary care. And I should note here, another very, very important step, unfortunately we weren't able to, and when I say we, I'm referring to a cadre of students that are back in my office desperately making phone calls to doctors to see whether or not they accept Medicaid, because one does have to control for that when looking at access to care at the community level. Many of the doctors that I've mapped, and we'll be looking at a map of distribution of doctors on Long Island, many of them do not accept Medicaid. And that's something very important to take into consideration when you're doing this kind of analysis. So that would be a next step in the research, is to control for that. What I did do, however, is I excluded doctors that were within a quarter mile of a hospital because they're likely to work for the hospital and not be serving the local population. The methodology involved multivariate regression analysis, looking at ER use, the rate of ER use by zip code, and a number of explanatory variables. And I'm going to rush through the regression analysis here just to get to the results, but they'll be available online afterwards in case you want to look at, you know, nitty-gritty regression results. So the regression results look at the determinants of rates of ER use by zip code with respect to the determinants, including income, proximity to clinics, number of doctors or doctors, ratio of doctors per capita in the neighborhood, and a variety of other factors that we'll get to. So here we are starting the first map. Looks at census tracts on Long Island, and it's mapping here by racial groups. So you can see that Long Island is one of the most segregated areas, and I actually didn't know that until I started to do this study, but I looked at the map and I thought, wow, that is really something else. Long Island is one of the most, and it, as it turns out, it's I believe it's the third most racially segregated area in the country. And that is fairly clear here. So the blue areas, the dark blue areas represent areas where less than 10% of the population is non-white. The other areas, the red color, is primarily African Americans, black families, and then you have an overlay of percent of the population that's Hispanic that is a greenish color. So you end up with some areas are red, some areas are brownish, and that's an overlay of the two maps. With mapping systems, you need to have transparency between maps sometimes so that you can superimpose one piece of information on top of another piece of information. And it's, you know, it can be a little tricky, but it can also be extremely informative in terms of layering a variety of different types of data so that you can draw the associations. I'm sticking to some pretty simple maps today, just because I've only got 20 minutes. But there are other maps that I could send. If you're interested, let me know. Okay, so you can see that Long Island, again, is a fairly segregated area, and we want to look at, in order to do this kind of analysis, you really need to see where the doctors or how the doctors are distributed across the island if you want to look at access to care. To show that there is, I actually did a mapping, gave some technical support to a group called Erase Racism on Long Island, and they wanted to look at the relationship between location of populations, housing, and education. Elaine Gross is the director, and I had agreed to work with her on this project. The dotted outlines are areas where fewer than 10% of the student population are white. Now, population in those areas might be higher percentage of white, but the majority of those students are going outside of those school districts. And you can see that the school districts almost look like they've been drawn around the census tracts where they are high proportions of minorities, which is a bit disturbing. Superposing on that, no surprise, those are the low-performing schools. Those are low-income communities on Long Island, as elsewhere in the country. We finance our schools by property taxes, and as long as you have that system, you are likely to end up with underfunded schools in low-income communities. That issue has been partially addressed in New York City, where they won a court battle, but Long Island has yet to address that issue. There is, one of the reasons I left this slide in, is that there does seem to be a strong relationship between education, ER use, and health outcomes on Long Island. Here we have a map of median household income. You can see that the darker areas are superimposed. I'm leaving the outlines for the segregated school districts on here because they allow you to follow the demographics as we move along. So clearly, the low-income areas are in those minority areas with the low-performing school districts. This is a map of female-headed households. That gives us an idea that female-headed households are going to be related, or that the proportion of female-headed households in a neighborhood appear to be closely related to ER use. However, once you control for income and or proportion of families in poverty, it limits the value of that variable somewhat. Though it is, knowing from past research, I know that it is still heavily related, or strongly related. Here is a map of the number of primary care doctors per 1,000 population on Long Island. Now, the blue areas are the areas with two or more doctors per 1,000 population. The green areas would be the underserved areas on Long Island. Okay, that's where there are very few doctors. And actually, if you, I should maybe give a bit of background here. Long Island is divided into Nassau and Suffolk County. On the left-hand side of the map, that's Nassau County. It competes for the number one slot in terms of richest counties in the country. Okay, so extremely high levels of income and wealth, and yet some of the greatest disparities in healthcare in the country. And then on the right, there's a much lower income area of Suffolk County, where there are much higher populations of recent immigrants. It's very agricultural out there. You have a lot of agricultural workers, and that also raises important issues for public health, because there are many communities that are underserved in terms of healthcare and that need additional technical assistance in terms of where they need more Spanish-speaking healthcare workers out there, and there is a shortage of them at the moment. Okay, so when we actually break it down and do the numbers, doctors per 1,000, we've got 0.8 in the bottom one-fifth of zip codes in terms of income, and 3.5 doctors per 1,000 population in the richest one-fifth of the population, or zip codes. I also mapped onto this one hospitals in 2002 and hospitals in 2011. And just a, yes?
Can you give a sense of what the scale is? Is this 5 miles, 100 miles long? I don't know how to look at that.
That's a good question, because in terms of driving, it depends on the traffic. So let's say from the leftmost portion to about halfway down the map is about 50 miles. So it's probably the whole thing. On here, and Long Island, one of the problems with mapping Long Island is that it's very long and thin, and just in terms of mapping, it's very difficult. I see I'm running out of time here, so I'm going to run through some results here. So rate of ER use is very much higher among Medicaid populations. Okay, so if you compare the insured at a rate in the bottom income quintile, and that's where emergency room rates are very high. You've got 59 per 1,000 at the bottom. You've got Medicaid, 269. Again, all of these, look at this. This is ER use for adults. This is among the Medicaid population. Okay, so very much higher. So having insurance, Medicaid insurance, does not guarantee that you have access to primary care. There are so few doctors that accept Medicaid on Long Island, and this is also true of New York City as well, that even if you have health insurance coverage, it does not guarantee access to care. Here are similar slides for children. Here is overall rate of emergency use among children. Here it is for children on Medicaid. This is, again, rate per 1,000 and should not depend upon the proportion of children in that area that have Medicaid, okay, because we're controlling for that. Here are emergency room rates per 1,000 non-Hispanic whites on Long Island. Here is for blacks on Long Island. Whites, blacks. This very strong disparity persists even after you control for income and education and proximity to clinics and proximity to doctors. You can control for a very wide range of geographic and financial socioeconomic characteristics, and the racial disparity continues to persist. And this persists into, or it's translated into, poorer health outcomes for African Americans on Long Island, and this is true around the country. So one of the important takeaways here, we see the signs outside that say that the zip code matters, where your zip code, where you live, determines your health. It's not just where you live. Even controlling for where you live and your socioeconomic background, race still matters. In fact, if you look at the regression analysis in the slides later, you'll see that race wipes out all the other characteristics combined. Now, that's largely due to multicollinearity between the various variables. But one still has to take into consideration the fact that race plays such an important role, because when you go back and you look at those new programs in healthcare reform that are designed to address very high rates of emergency room use, they're going to have to address the race issue and really get to the underlying reasons for higher rates of emergency room use for primary care among black populations across the country. Now, as a health economist, I have heard very, very frequently, and this is one of the principal issues I want to address here, is that blacks in the United States don't trust healthcare. So I've heard this at conferences like this. They don't trust doctors, and therefore they don't go to doctors. If you actually look at minority communities, there is already very, very little access to doctors. One of the reasons I wanted to show the hospital slide is that low-income communities have far fewer hospitals. They're much further away from hospital facilities. But even controlling for those factors, they still have less access to care. And until we address that issue, I think that we're not really going to address the issue of disparities that features so prominently in the new healthcare reform literature. How we do that, I've raised some issues in the conclusions to the presentation, but it's going to be a thorny issue. At the moment, again, my students back in my office are collecting data on access to public transportation, whether or not people have access to facilities and doctors. We're also going to be looking at which doctors accept Medicaid, and hopefully at some point we'll be looking at whether or not people are turned away from doctors' offices. But we really need to look at the underpinnings of what's happening there on the racial level to make sure that we address this whole issue of disparities to care. And I welcome you to look at the slides, and if you have questions, if you want additional information, please feel free to contact me. Thank you very much.